We live in a very strange time in the age of social media. While previous generations of the church members had to face a lot of persecution from outside of the church, it seems to me that these days, a lot of the opposition to the church comes actually from its own members. Members that sometimes claim that they are teaching a truer gospel than that you might hear at General Conference. This is very concerning and confusing at times. I was very happy to sit down with my fellow BYU Conservatives Instagram page admin, Tommy Stevenson, and hop on a Zoom call with a couple, Catherine and Carson, who have a podcast called Around the Kitchen Table, where they discuss a lot of the things that I like to discuss on my podcast. We had a great conversation about some of the things that people like to talk about in the gospel, but maybe don't always talk about in the right way. Well, let's get into it. I'm Luke Hansen, and this is Red Pill, Blue Blood. Before we get started, I would, as always, ask you to please share this with your friends if you find it interesting, or even just bring up these topics with them. Also, I did notice recently that Spotify has a rating system. I don't know how long that's been there, but if you're listening to this on Spotify, you can go to the Red Pill Blue Blood Spotify page, and there will be a little rating star under the picture, and you can just hit 5 stars, of course. I guess I'll let you do 4. 4 or 5, okay? I'm being generous. Just hit that. I don't know how much it helps, but, you know, it's not going to hurt, so I would really appreciate that. All right, let's get started. This week, we have on with us Carson and Catherine, and they are the co-hosts of the Around the Kitchen Table podcast. So, Carson and Catherine, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And where are you guys located?
So, we're in Utah right now.
Okay. So, Carson and Catherine have been doing some of the same type of stuff that I've been doing. I'm a little more focused on BYU, but you've been talking about the church and church culture with a woke type of stuff, especially more in general. I really liked your Black Menaces podcast that you just did. So a little shout out for that, a little pitch for that. I was thinking about covering them, but I think you guys got all the points that I was thinking about covering. Yeah. But something that I haven't talked about, and apparently you haven't talked about, is a couple of things that have been happening in the church recently. And one of those things is talking about Heavenly Mother. Now, I didn't know, maybe you guys could fill me in on this. I didn't really know that this was a thing that was going on until I heard about it like 2 days before General Conference. And then apparently they addressed it at the women's session of General Conference. So I'd be interested if any of you guys, what you heard about it before happened.
I've heard stuff mostly. The main thing that I've heard about is Julie Hanks talking about Heavenly Mother and addressing that on her Instagram account. And just mostly, that's basically the only experience that I've had with it being addressed within, I guess, within the broader topics of the gospel. It's not addressed that much, but she has addressed it a lot. And so a lot of people have commented on various posts that she's talked about Heavenly Mother. And I've just seen that as a trend following her. That's basically all I've seen of it.
Yeah. So we, there's been some instances in the past where some feminists in the church have kind of latched on this whole Heavenly Mother concept, you know, like, what about Heavenly Mother? Yada, yada. Well, we found out through my parents when they came to visit in town, they have some friends who live in more south of us in Utah. Well, their friends told my parents that the church has been addressing this recently in General Conference because there were some wards that were actually praying to Heavenly Mother. So that's why a lot of this stuff started cropping up. Then the general authorities got wind of it. And that's why I think they're really starting to hit home on this whole Heavenly Mother concept. So.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
Do you know what kind of timeline it was? Like how long that had been going on?
Oh, I don't know. Did they say?
I mean, it was recently, because we would have heard way before.
Right.
Yeah, it was recent. I mean, as you know, like, if it's being talked about in general conference, like, it's probably a problem.
Right.
So exactly. It's not. Yeah,
because I saw several things on, she has like a highlight section, Julie Hanks, where people they respond back to some of her questions, or she says, what are your questions or what are your experiences with Heavenly Mother? And some people have said on those story highlights, and she reposts them, that, oh, I pray to Heavenly Mother. Heavenly Mother is like my deity, that type of thing. And so
it's like so cringy just like even listen to. I can't even believe it.
So I'll play devil's advocate a little bit here and say, if Heavenly Father and Heavenly Mother are in a marriage, and it's very similar to the way that we get married in the church, since we're supposed to be basically practicing, is a word that's often used, practicing for heaven, then if they're co-equal, then what would be the problem with praying to her?
Well,
yeah, I think the church has come out and said, like, I've seen general authority say the reason we pray to our Father in heaven is because that's the way it's been instructed from Christ. That's how Christ addressed, like, his quote unquote heavenly parents. And so that's kind of the order that we follow, is what Jesus Christ did. I'm sure if Christ would have prayed to Heavenly Mother, then that would be what we do. But that isn't what we do. I feel like it's not. Like, the church is, it's like a culture thing, like with Mother in Heaven, like, it's been taught to not talk about Mother in Heaven. But a lot of general authorities say, like, it's not taboo. It's just, we don't know much about Mother in Heaven.
Well, and to bounce off that, I think, Elder Renlund, in his talk during the Women's General Conference, where he addressed this specifically, he said, what is known about Mother in Heaven is summarized in this gospel topic essay. And there was like a hyperlink. And then it says, once you have read what is there, you will know everything that I know about the subject. I wish I knew more. You too may still have questions and want to find more answers. Seeking greater understanding is an important part of our spiritual development, but please be cautious. Reason cannot replace revelation. And this is something like we have talked about several times before, where there may be topics in the gospel that you may have questions about. Like we had talked about before, like Blacks receiving the priesthood. Or polygamy. Like, we may never fully know why we're like certain things happen or the timeline. And it's fine to like ponder about them and to wonder, but it's very tricky because you don't completely start to consume everything about you, and you don't want that to be the crack, you know, that you kind of feed into that now kind of decimates your entire testimony, you know? So it's like, be curious. That's okay. But don't go crazy with it, you know?
Yeah. And keep it within the bounds of what I guess would be doctrinally correct, because I know if there's things online, you can't just say, jump from, we know there's a Heavenly Mother and that's like the general gist of what that paper articulates, and then say, oh, we should pray to her and do all these other things with respect to Heavenly Mother and Heavenly Father. So, like with what Elder Renlund said, reason doesn't replace revelation, reason doesn't replace revelation. You should keep it within the bounds of the general revelation that's been received within the bounds of the church, within the confines of the church, if it comes to something that would apply to the church as a whole, because you can't say, I guess, you can receive personal revelation for, like, say, oh, I need to get this job or stuff like that. But that's not within the bounds of the church. That's just your own personal life. If you're saying that a subject such as Heavenly Mother, which would apply to everybody, if that was in fact the way you should go about it, like pray to her, you can't just say, oh, that's personal revelation specifically for me, when that could be generally applied to everyone else as well.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly tangential, but applied to this thing of you can't receive revelation outside the church. Hank Smith and John, by the way, do a Come Follow Me podcast. And recently they were talking about the Ten Commandments with a professor, and they always bring on professors that are very knowledgeable in this kind of stuff. And in the Thou Shalt Not Kill, he was talking about later in the scriptures, there are, it gives the specific conditions where you can kill someone, because obviously in war or those type of things. And he was explaining how the way that Nephi structures his story, it was very clear that Nephi is aware of these stipulations for when you can. It had to be like a situation you didn't plan on being in, and like without, well, it's like without premeditated intent, and they were blocking something that was life-threatening to you. It was something like that. And so Nephi is very careful. So it seems like Nephi is getting revelation to do something against the commandments for himself personally. But in reality, the way he sets up the story is he's showing it falls within the parameters set out in the Old Testament. And I had never heard that before, and I thought it was pretty cool. So it just emphasizes the point that we don't get to receive revelation that falls outside of a church doctrine.
That opposes it. It's like if I were to go to my bishop and say, hey, I'm a full tithe payer, I received revelation that I can pay 5%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, exactly. Okay.
Or like 12%. I do 12% tithe, so I'm a full tithe payer.
So I get extra blessings.
Payer. I get extra, I'm entitled to more blessings.
I have heard, it was some blogger person, and he says he's heard a few whisperings of people saying, well, I think that the church is not efficient with their money, so I donate 10%, but I just do it to the organizations that I feel should have the money, and then I declare myself a full tithe payer. It's like, yeah, that's one of those instances of...
Oh, my God.
You can't... You can't go to the temple by donating 10% of your income to Black Lives Matter mansions. It doesn't work like that.
Well, yeah, like, I know, and I don't want to, like, keep beating a dead horse or anything, but, like, I know people that are leaders in the church that have justified, like, to break the word of wisdom because they feel like it's between them and the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it, I mean, those, they're leaders in the church. I mean,
I think
it makes you kind of shake your head. Okay.
Yeah. But I think this is interesting because this is something that like you and I have been talking about a lot recently where, you see a lot of emphasis of needing to go back to like the basic principles within the church. Like they are going back to like basic, like they're stripping stuff down. And I mean, cause we always think back to when the new proclamation was read. You know, we were like on the edge of our seats. We were waiting for something like really profound. We're like, what's this portion? You know what I mean? Like we're, you know, and it was something very basic. I mean, they were talking about the restoration, how Joseph Smith was a prophet. You know what I mean? Like it was something very basic. And that's what we've also noticed kind of what's been happening the last few general conferences is it's been really basic stuff. And, but I think it's, they do it for a reason because a lot of people nowadays are taking those basic principles and like twisting them to fit what they want to do. So like the loving your neighbor, that's the one that people love to just hit home, right? Yep. It's all about
love your neighbor and judge not.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all about love and not judging, but like no one wants to talk about the need, like needing to keep your commandments, no other gods before me. You know what I mean? Like no one wants to talk about the other things because they're kind of scary. They're scarier. But so it's just really interesting to kind of see how that's been playing out, you know, in the last few general conferences and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't know if you guys, if we're kind of leading into the direction you guys wanted to talk about tonight, but I, to go along with like the woke mentality, like that's, you can see like that's how it's being bled into the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there is no justice anymore in within the church, right? I mean, God has got a justice. But the way that church members are treating it is like a Catherine uses this phrase, like a, the buffet one.
I said that the people, they treat the commandments like a celestial buffet. Like they just walk down the line and they pick which ones that look good and they skip the other ones. That doesn't sound so good to me.
And I will say it's hard. Cause like anytime you talk about this too, I feel like people are going to look at us and be like, oh, like get off your high horse.
Right.
You know, who are you to say, like, obviously we're not perfect. There's things we're working on, clearly. Like, I'll be the first to say, I'm the first one to say shit down hell. Like, sorry if that's not loud, sorry. Well, like, I'm not a perfect guy. Like I'm working on stuff all the time. But, like at the same time, I'm real. Like, I'm not going to just lie about who God is or the commandments or the church just so I feel better about myself. Like, that's not the purpose of the atonement.
So. Yeah, and I think that goes back to the whole point with, like, the whole love your neighbor, judge not. Like, the first two great commandments are love God and then love thy neighbor as thyself. Mm-hmm. And I've heard people talk about this. Basically, the only way you can properly love someone and love yourself is to first love God. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be within the rules that, well, I mean, none of us fall within those rules that he set for us, but you want to have a desire to be within the bounds the Lord has set, and then also apply that to others, but don't be a Pharisee about it, I would, for a lack of a better term. So you don't want to judge, but also you don't want to just say everything's fine, just love yourself the way you are, don't change anything about you, because that's not Christ-like, because right. Then you just don't change and you stay stagnant.
Well, right. And I think today people have misconstrued loving versus support. You can love somebody, but that doesn't mean you necessarily have to support them. If I have a sister who is an alcoholic, you know, I can love her and I can hope the best for her and I can help in any way that I can without condemning myself. But does that mean I go and buy her the alcohol? No. Does it mean I love her any less because I haven't bought her alcohol? No. You know, so I think people have like made these connections where in order to truly love someone, you must support them fully and aid them in whatever quest they're on. I think that's completely twisted of what like true gospel principles are, you know, because you can't condemn yourself in the process and you have to be fulfilling what you're supposed to be doing, you know, for the people around you as well. So.
And you'll find that because people will be saying, when it comes to issues of Heavenly Mother or any sort of LGBTQ or anything like that, where people want to do stuff outside of the church, it's always don't judge, love everybody, look how nice I am because I'm letting them do these things. But right when they perceive that somebody is judging, they suddenly become very intolerant. Anything that, you know, Twitter, we're recording this right after Elon Musk has bought Twitter, and Twitter is freaking out that all this misinformation and disinformation and hate speech is going to be out there. To like an inordinate degree. And so any principle that you are clinging onto, you need to be able to draw it to its logical conclusion. And if your principle of tolerance drawn to its logical conclusion makes you intolerant of every single person that isn't as tolerant as you decide needs to happen, then that's not a useful principle. You're not actually executing and developing tolerance in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Continue. Well, I was just going to change topics. So,
I was just going to say, I think for a lot of those people too, I think it comes that those kinds of reactions come from a deeper place. You know, I think they within themselves, something is fighting against itself. And I think people tend to snap really quickly or they tend to react with anger really fast. If you're confronting them with something that they're already kind of struggling with internally. And because people just don't want anything to do with that. They want to keep an arm's length because they're trying to constantly convince themselves what they're doing is correct, even though the spirit or something else may be telling them otherwise. And a famous phrase of ours that we got from my mom is, you know, convincing versus conveying. And so that's something that they're doing is they're constantly convincing themselves, you know, what they're doing is correct. And so if you say something opposing that, that's for them, that doesn't work, you know.
What would be an example of conveying?
So it would be like living your gospel principles and then acting them out, but not needing to like showcase them or broadcast them. You know, you do what you say you're going to do and what you believe in, and you convey that to people that you interact with and come in contact with at any time. So that's the difference between, you know, the two of those. So.
Like how come we don't see any straight parades going through like New York?
Exactly. I think with these doctrines, the priesthood especially, and then Heavenly Mother nowadays, I think people, your first step in the wrong direction is when you slightly try to progress the discussion or the knowledge that we have on the subject a little further than it actually is in the church right now. So for Blacks in the priesthood, I see this as people who decide the priesthood ban was entirely 100% racism on Brigham Young's fault. Brigham Young's part. And then the reason why it continued until 1978 was purely 100% due to racism. And there wasn't any sort of, maybe there was some other idea behind it. The church has not taken that hard of a stance on the topic, but a lot of people have themselves convinced that that is the actual truth. And then with Heavenly Mother, I have seen, it's not as obvious, but I've seen people who say that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I understand, this theory that maybe it's out of respect for Heavenly Mother hasn't been explicitly disproven. It's basically just, I don't know. But I've seen a couple of people on Instagram, it's mostly Instagram, that are saying, no, this whole concept that it's out of respect for her is completely false. That's completely false doctrine. Don't believe it for a second. And as far as I know, it's like, that could be a reason, but they just want to try and act like they know a little more than the church has actually declared. And there's the scripture, I believe it's in the Book of Mormon, and it said that the blindness, I think it was of the Pharisees, came because of them looking beyond the mark, and then it became a stumbling block for them. And I know Quentin L. Cook talked about that a couple of years ago at General Conference and emphasized that. So I think we just have to be very careful to look to the scriptures and things like the gospel topic essays first and convince ourselves of the things in there before going out and seeing what the influences are telling us the doctrine is. I don't know if anybody else has a comment on that.
I would say it's also along the lines of you're saying you're trying to progress stuff further than the church has already put out, like on doctrine. I would say a lot of people do that with the family proclamation. Hmm. They think that it's going to change. And as not Holland, Oaks said in the and General Conference, it's not going to change.
Not policy, or it's doctrine.
Not policy, that it's doctrine. And like, because I've seen people that want to have like gay marriage in the temple, like have that be sealed by the Lord in the temple. And that in terms of policy, like I'm libertarian on gay marriage, and but I think
as far as governments
and stuff go, but if you're encroaching on a religious ceremony that's between a man and a woman, that's where I would draw the line on that. And also just in terms of doctrine, it wouldn't be feasible.
Yeah.
Right. Oh my gosh, I have like so many points. Yeah, so like, I'll just go through them real fast. So for the racism thing, and like the blacks and the priesthood, how the racism excuse is would be the easiest, right? That'd be the easiest one. You could just say, oh, that's racism. That's it. Signed, sealed, delivered. It's wrapped up in a little cute little bow. That's exactly what it was. Where if you actually look at history, I think it had a lot to play with the timing of everything that had been going on. Because you can see it happened, I think, right after kind of the bulk of the civil rights movement. Things were almost starting to calm down a little bit more. And I think, and I mean, this is just me. This is not gospel or anything like that. For me, I think the Lord knew the timing had to be right. I think if it was implemented too soon, when everything was really hot and heavy with the civil rights movement, I think it would have created bigger problems. So for me, I think it was a big timing issue. And I think the Lord knew when the people needed it, like enacted, not saying it was right or whatever, but that's kind of my thought on that. And then for the gay marriage whole thing in the temple, I think it shows people's their testimony and like where it really lies, because I think to them it's just like any other place to get married. It's just like a field somewhere outside where you can get married. And to I think people don't, when they talk about the temple that way, like, oh, let's just rewrite what God has ordained, you know, it's no big deal. I think it shows where they hold those truths within themselves, because if you truly valued what happens in the temple, you wouldn't say anything like that at all. So I think that shows where people's testimonies lie with things like that. But what do you have to say?
I think the only thing that I'll mention is like the blacks and the priesthood. I think the reason it's, like Catherine said, it's an easy thing to point out first is because like us, like humans, not necessarily LDS humans, just humans in general, like, it's like human nature to look at like distinctions between people. Right. Like, I don't know, as we were talking about this, like my mind started racing. Like, when I served my mission, I served in Virginia, and, I mean, that's like it was like the Bible Belt. So like, I had people talk like, you guys are Mormons, you guys are racist, because I know you guys didn't let blacks have like even be in the church, you know? And, regardless of that, you know, obviously that wasn't true, but, anyways, so I talked to my mission president about it all the time. And the thing that stuck out, the thing he reminded me is in the Old Testament, there was like certain criteria that people had to meet. Like one example, I can't sit here and say I know where it is in the scriptures, but he said like one of the requirements back then was the lineage that you came from was how you were able to enter the old temples in the Old Testament. And then like it even got to like eye color, like hair color. Like it was very there were very specific requirements. And it's easy for us to say, like, I don't know, I don't want to like get too deep into it, but like we don't know like what kind of requirements the Lord had for him to, because this is the restoration. Like the church is still being restored, right? There's still things that it's not just like a big moment in time where it's the restoration. Now it's Christ church on the earth. It is, but everything has to be restored. A fullness of the gospel has to be restored. And so like, I still think that there's things that are being restored to the earth from back then. And that's just how I feel. So like I said, I feel like there's more to it than just like race. Right. Mm-hmm. And,
well, I think especially when it comes to stuff that involves history, I think a lot of the times, like we read history in books and it's so easy just to kind of almost act like these people are just fictional characters on the page. Like they're people who never had like backgrounds and like their own family problems and, you know, their downfalls, their, you know, great attributes, you know what I mean? Like these were real people in real times, and history is a lot more complex than what people like to think. Like you can't always just boil stuff down to just make it fit what you want it to fit. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like we also need to give people in history like a break, you know, like you have to give them like cut them some slack sometimes. And obviously it depends on what you're talking about.
Well, like but, even like it's not just like Christianity, like every religion has like almost like black marks against it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's religions, like
Catholic Church.
Well, like what religion, the time of, Egypt, Moses, like the decree to like kill, the firstborn son.
Oh,
wasn't that religious? That wasn't just a decree from the Pharaoh, right? That was a religious thing. I could be wrong. I thought it had religious things to it. Well,
didn't he make that decree because he, like someone told him that?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not claiming. I'm just saying like there's so many things out there where it's like, it's not just black and white, no pun intended. I mean, there's so many like
fast. Yeah, there's so much to it. Joke,
yeah.
But anyway, like
they may not have our sense of humor.
Like, does that make sense? Like, am I making sense or am I just like blowing hot air?
You're making sense.
It makes sense. Yeah, I would say with race and the reason, I definitely think it had to do with racism, but I don't think it was like the only factor in the time. And I definitely don't think that the reason why I was delayed so long was solely out of racism either. I think that because it had been said by Brigham Young that people were afraid to question it in the church, or even some of the general authorities were afraid to address it. Or, but like you said, history is murky. Like, I think there's this term, it's called chronological snobbery. Basically, you're treating...
I have not heard that before.
You're treating people in the past with the lessons you've learned over that have been gifted to you over the last several hundred years, right, by
mistakes partly made by those people partly that you're sticking your nose up at. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And so when people say, like, people look at history when they say, oh, I would have fought for abolition, or I would have stopped the Nazis and the slave camps, or I would have done this. It's like,
but what are you doing on abortion right now? Well, in 200 years, that's going to look a lot different than it does now.
Well, yes. But are you willing, like, hypothetically speaking, would you, like, I would ask this question to a if I were to do this, like if I was a teacher in a classroom, I would say, okay, raise your hand if you think you would have stopped slavery or you would have been against slavery at the time. And probably I would say 80% of the people would raise their hand. Or say if you would have reported the Nazi prisoners, or not Nazi prisoners, the Nazi prison guards, and like 80%, 90% of people would raise their hand. I'm just like, do you really think that you would stand up at a time where you would most likely get highly persecuted or killed in order to do something that was not in line with the rest of society, basically? Like, have you ever done that in this present day? And if you hadn't, then likely you wouldn't have done it then. And that's not demeaning anyone specifically, but it's just human nature that we don't usually want to risk ourselves in that sort of a situation. Like, I talked about this with Greg the other day.
You're talking about Greg Madsen, who runs Quick Media, which is a podcast on YouTube.
And if you get I think it was 10 people in a room, one person's the test subject, everyone else is in on it. If you put four lines up on a board and one of them is shorter than the rest, and then everyone else lies and says, hey, they're all the same length, I think it's like 70% of the time or 80% of the time, the one person who's the test subject who doesn't know will say, yeah, they're the same length, just because they don't want to make a fuss about it. And that concept and that attitude plays into societal patterns over time. And you can't just say that, oh, yes, I would have been the one to stand up. It's like, would you be the one that stands up and says that the one line is shorter than the rest? Like, odds are you wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So do you think you're going to risk?
Even when there's very little risk involved.
Yeah. And so do you think you're going to risk your life and like your whole risk your life, persecution, all these different things in order to go against the grain in a specific point in time? If you hadn't done that like today, there odds are you probably wouldn't do that then. And so people just have to have a perspective about have perspective, I would say, mm-hmm. in treating people of the past with the values that they hold now, like applying it to them.
I think the more technical definition of that is presentism. Instead yes. of chronological snobbery and presentism, I think are the same thing. And it's this bias. Although I do want to... Because, of course, some people are trying to be very progressive. And then some people more on the conservative side have actually... I don't know anybody personally, or I haven't read any Instagram thing, but I have heard actually from Greg Madsen on Quick Media that some people more on the right, more on the conservative side, have left the church because they don't think the church is doing enough to push back against this. So I do want to throw it to you two, Catherine and Carson, and ask you what have you seen people kind of getting mad at the church for maintaining a neutral stance about?
Yeah, I've gotten a few messages from some members online who they kind of wish people were really upset when Nelson came out in support of the vaccine. People mm-hmm. were upset about that. And then two, people have also been upset when the church has kind of remain neutral on a lot of topics. And they are kind of what, and to that, I have to say the one thing with Nelson, you have to take into account, he was a doctor. Okay. That's going to play a big part. Okay. And two, these are people like Nelson is his own person. Like he's going to formulate his own opinions about something like that. And plus that whole thing, was a whole thing within itself. When they came out to urge people to get the vaccine, that came from it came from the administrative side of the church. It had nothing to do with the revelatory side of the church. And then as well, my whole thing is the church has always said that they want to remain neutral, kind of for multiple reasons. But I think the biggest is their focus is more so on like eternal salvation. They're not going to get caught up in the political games of today. And to me, I find that quite comforting because it's one place I can go to try to escape all that kind of stuff, because everything politically is getting so crazy. It's nice to go to a place where that's just not even talked about, really. Like, it shouldn't be talked about, you know, like, you're more focused on the eternal perspective of things versus what's going on right now, because you're getting slammed with that in your face every day, you know? So that's my, what do you think?
I honestly don't care.
What, that the church doesn't say anything?
Well, no, like, I don't care that people leave the church because, like, they want the church to say something a specific way. Like, do what you want. Like the church, if you look at it from an outside view, like, the church is a business, right? They're not going to do anything that's going to damn themselves in the public eye. So, like, of course they're going to play the games. They're going to play the games, like, with the government. Like, that's one of the things with the church, is like, you abide by the local route, the laws of your local government, right? So what I have a problem with is, I used to work with a guy that was the bishop, and we actually talked about, like, the vaccine, and I was told not to get the vaccine from my doctor. And I went in, I got diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And so I reached out to my doctor, and he said, I wouldn't get it. Wait until there's more research, blah, 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 blah. So when I was talking to this guy, and it's not like a deadly disease or anything, but when I was talking to this guy who's the bishop, he was saying, like, basically, like, why haven't you got it? The prophet has urged you to get it. Like, nothing bad will happen. And my whole counterpoint was, like, don't you believe in, like, personal revelation too? Like, even when it comes to the prophet, right? Like, you're supposed to be able to get revelation for yourself, that whatever the prophet is saying on whatever matter is true or not, right? That's what I've always been taught, and that's what I believe in. So I'm not going to blindly follow a prophet because he tells you to do something. Like, the Spirit's got to confirm to me, like, either yes or no. And so, mm-hmm. like, for a bishop to sit there and tell me, like, basically, you're an idiot. I mean, he was, like, pretty vocal. Like, I read the text to you. Like, he was pretty vocal on, like, you know, basically, you're an idiot because you're not following the prophet. Him and his wife went and got the vaccine the very next day. You know, there's not going to be problems, man. Just trust the prophet. Follow the prophet. Like, that's what they teach you as a kid. Like, it's a kid thing. I'm like, dude, shut up. Like, this is the problem. That's the problem with the church, in my opinion. Like, people like that, where it's like, he's a bishop. You know, he's giving advice to people in his ward about that kind of stuff and making people in his ward feel stupid. Like, that's a basic thing that is taught to church members, like, personal revelation before everything else.
Right.
Of course, follow the prophet. Yes. Like, he's not going to lead you astray. But at the same time, personal revelation is above that, in my opinion.
Well, and I think too, if people are choosing to leave the church solely or majority, like, based off the fact that the church isn't more political when it comes to certain things, that's people who have been struggling with the testimony and who are trying to find cracks to leave. Those people are.
I will say, like, you hear people all the time that say, like, how could you be a Democrat and be a member of the church? Like, I've heard that. Right? How could you vote for abortion but then be a member of the church? But, like, the church has always come out and said, like, you line up for whatever beliefs you want and vote on those. Like, the church is very neutral because, like Catherine said, like, they're going to stay out of it. They're going to, like, the church's one of the teachings is, like, we present the doctrine and let people choose for themselves.
Right. Well, so, and that's the thing, is agency plays the biggest part, because they're going to let people choose for themselves all this kind of stuff, because eventually they will be held accountable for these kinds of things. So it's like, okay, so you went to church on Sunday and then you showed up at a pro-choice rally on Saturday. Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to be held accountable for something like that to the Lord. So I think for them, it's like, agency is a big part, you know? I mean, that's...
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also important to say that the church exists outside of the United States. And so if they keep... They would have to also be making a lot of comments about many, many other countries politics that are, I mean, to an extent, the United States is a leader in the world and a cultural leader in the world and a very big and powerful country. So a lot of the debates that we're having are taking place in different countries. But for example, in some place like Africa, where I serve my mission, when Oaks is talking about efforts to confuse gender, they're probably sitting there saying, I'm not sure what this guy is talking about. What does he mean, efforts to confuse gender? Right. Unless they're like on some sort of social media thing. So you do, and the church leaders get out and about fairly often. So I think they're kind of zoomed out a little more than focusing in on this. There was one, I was going to make a small point on the vaccine. Yeah, sometimes some people did make a very big deal about that, but it was a church like press release type of statement. It was never over the pulpit at general conference. And the way it's worded, it was more in the context of do what you can to protect yourself against COVID. And as a subset of that, the vaccine could be part of it. It was constructed more in that way.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but like on Instagram, the church posted that press release, and within like, I want to say like 40 minutes or an hour.
Oh, not even.
Taken down immediately because.
No, the comments were shut off.
Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't taken down.
Because I saw it when it like first went up.
Yeah.
And I was like scrolling through all the comments. I was like, oh my gosh.
And then I went back and it shut off. They were so vicious. Oh my gosh.
I couldn't believe it.
It was awesome. I loved it.
And you'd imagine a couple of the people yelling at everybody else to get the vaccine would probably also be yelling at them not to judge other people's life choices about a variety of other topics.
Like we had in our ward, we had a high council member get up in fast and testimony meeting and tell everyone to go get vaccinated. So like that.
And he also went like as far as like chastising people.
Yeah,
if you haven't. Yeah. And so I got with the bishop and I let him know exactly how I felt about the whole thing. I was like, that's the problem.
Like the bishop, like I go back to like Joseph Smith days, right? Like the bishop should have got up and chastised him right then. Like, no, brother, that is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is not supposed to be happening. But instead, you know, you get these soft bishops that are like, oh, I want to be PC. You know, let's just not say anything. Let's just throw that under the rug. Like what if a non-member was in that meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this guy's, you know, chastising people for not being vaccinated. They'd never come back. Why would you come back?
Right.
So it, like that kind of stuff, like the church, like it's a good thing I'm not a bishop. Let's just say that.
It's a good thing I'll never be a bishop.
Because like,
I would have been like, click.
Yeah. Like I've been a part of so many testimony meetings where it's like, listen, Sister Johnson, I don't care that you spent 20, you know, I don't know. You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, you guys are missing. Like, it's like, listen, like sit down. Like, no one cares. Like, that's where, like, I get perceived as, like, a jerk because it's like, oh, well, you know, she's getting up and sharing her testimony. No, she's not sharing her testimony. She's reading a diary entry that she wrote last week. Mm-hmm. Like, she's not sharing her testimony. Mm-hmm. Sit down. I get passionate about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. That is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine as well.
I don't know
if I'd stand up and stop people, though.
No, I'm not saying I would get up and be like, sit down, Sister Johnson, but I would get up and be like, well, you need to emphasize, you know, the testimony of Jesus Christ. You didn't talk about Jesus Christ at all. You were talking about knitting for 20 minutes. Like,
you know, about your dead cat. The other 300 people here.
Yeah.
Trying to keep their 2-year-olds in line to listen to your knitting thing is not
entirely appropriate. I think it kind of goes back to like, the culture of the church, right? Because, I mean, even 100 years ago, that wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, I don't think it would happen. I mean, like I said, in the times of Brigham Young and like the founding of the church, like they would chastise people. Like, no, like you're not speaking correct. And then they would even go to the lengths of like repent. Like, what you said is wrong. Go and repent. Change your ways. Like, maybe I'm not saying maybe I would say that, but I would at least get up and correct false doctrine.
Right.
So, and then like I said, I feel like it all kind of ties into that almost like a safe space, right? Like church is not it is a safe space where you can go and like worship.
Well, it should be a peaceful place.
Right. Yeah. But you should also be, I feel like church should be an environment where the spirit can testify of truth.
Exactly.
Right. So if someone gets up, bishop, whoever it is, and they're not speaking truth, like, well, something's got to change.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think just like put a pin in everything we've talked about. It's like people need to really focus on like true gospel teachings and they need to stop kind of like rewording things to fit themselves. And, you know, when we always talk about like the eternal perspective as well, you know, it's like,
I have a question. Are you guys from Utah?
I'm from California, but I've been here for a number of years.
Yeah. And I'm from upstate New York, but I've been here 5 years now, including the mission, if you include the mission.
Okay. I feel like, I feel like it's not necessarily a problem with the church, but at least the culture of Utah is there's basic truths that don't get talked about enough. And I feel like, cause I grew up here. I mean, I'm from here. I feel like it's almost taboo to really talk about like the atonement or anything really foundational that a real testimony needs to be built on.
Like deep doctrinal stuff.
And it's not, well, in my, like where I was going, it's not even deep doctrinal stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like the basic stuff, like prayer.
Oh,
like I would be willing to bet 50% of every ward does, like they don't pray correctly. I would almost guarantee it. And maybe that's a bold statement, but something as simple as prayer or tithing, like the basic commandments of the church, I feel like we don't talk about enough. Like people get lost in the weeds. And that's where like my problem is instead of focusing on like the foundational things, we focus on Mother in Heaven, right? Or, you know, woke practices that get infiltrated, like, I don't know.
Well, they're getting distracted. And I think that's why also the general authorities have been also going back to those foundational things, because people are, they're not like perfecting the foundational things. They're getting like lost in all this weird stuff that really shouldn't even matter.
Well, you know what I mean? let me clarify something. Like the 50% that I talked about, like prayer, maybe it's not necessarily they don't know how to pray, but it's the fact, it's the act of praying is now it's just a ritual, right? Father in Heaven, we're thankful for this day. Please bless, we'll have a good day. Bless my mommy and daddy. Amen. Like, and that's where they say for 80 years.
No. Right? You gotta remember, please help this food nourish and strengthen our bodies.
That it will do us the good that we need. And, you know, like that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's not prayer. Like, we're not the Catholic Church where we have written prayers. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to like get too passionate about it. I'm just trying to like think big term. Like that's my biggest problem with like the woke things, right? Like let's stop talking about the things that don't matter. Let's focus on the things that do matter, because those are the things that are going to save us, right? That salvation stuff. So I don't know. I'll get off my soapbox. I don't want to.
I think it's a good soapbox to be on. And it does, what you're saying has come to the looking beyond the mark part. I think that a lot of people are making a very large effort unknowingly, but to remove faith from the church. So we need to dive into all these little topics and solve all of them, so we don't need to have faith anymore in any part of the gospel. And kind of going back to the basics thing that you were talking about, that is the first principle. And it's a very interesting word, and a lot has been said on it, but the way I've been thinking about it recently is having a trust in something that you know isn't going to let you down. Mm-hmm. So when you run into problems, putting them in context of everything else and saying, you know, everything else, the testimonies that I've received, the things that I've seen, the way that it makes sense to me, this thing is small compared to all of that. And so I can trust that that's going to make sense someday somehow.
Right. Well, and faith is one of those things that, you know, you teach the primary children, you know, faith is like a little seed, you know, like you teach these kinds of things and people talk about it so frivolously, but then it's one of those actions that once the rubber meets the road, like, what are you truly practicing? Like, are you truly practicing faith? Like, are you really following what you're being told, like from the Spirit? Like, and are you taking those feelings and going with that versus overriding those feelings and going with you, what you want to do? And like, we've had a lot of these experiences recently where the confirmations we were getting from the Spirit were not lining up with what we thought was the best route. But we followed the Spirit. And then it was later down the line, we saw what was really going on, you know? And I think that also plays a part into like, do you have faith in like the family proclamation? And do you have a testimony in the family proclamation? Because if you do, you will have a lot of comfort right now in a time where the world is very chaotic. So faith has a lot of different aspects and you can practice it a lot of different ways. But for a lot of people, it's probably one of the hardest things for them to do. And I just always think it's interesting that all these things we teach the primary children, we always joke about, you know, it's the primary answers are the ones, you know, but it's the hardest ones for people to get down. So even when they're like 50 or 60.
Yeah. Something's easier. They're easier said than done, just mm-hmm. always when it's so basic. And I want to bring it back to, because we were going to talk about CRT a little bit. And I think that's been I think that has been infiltrating the church, BYU, that kind of stuff, because there's been debates on, I know, what's his name? The guy who said how to be an anti-racist is going to strengthen your testimony. What's his name again?
This was a professor at BYU whose name is Ryan Gabriel.
Yeah. And so I think that specifically, I guess more so at BYU, I'm not sure with boards, but using stuff like how to be an anti-racist and critical race theory in the confines of the gospel, I've seen that more and more, I guess, not necessarily at church, but I think at BYU where people are tying it to gospel principles, when in reality, if you look into the roots of CRT, it's based in Marxism, which is antithetical to principles of just Christianity in general and just having divine worth as an individual rather than valuing the group over the individual. I think that's been happening more and more as well. I don't know if you guys have seen anything like that in, say, your ward or heard stuff like that, gotten messages from people in church specifically.
I mean, I can't say like for our ward specifically, but I know, I mean, this stuff always tends to creep in where the younger minds tend to be present. That's the thing. You know, you don't see them going to like senior citizen homes and starting to infiltrate, you know, CRT, you know. They're trying to go into like the elementary schools. They're trying to get into the colleges, where you have these younger people who don't really know a lot, where something may sound really appealing. You know, oh yeah, of course I want to be an anti-racist. Why wouldn't I want to be anti-racist, right? But that's how Satan has gotten very good. Things have gotten twisted in a very appealing way. And, you know, things get wrapped up a certain way, but then it's not until you really start diving into them that you can kind of see the true origins of these things. And even like Planned Parenthood, you know, you could use that as an example. I mean, the founder of Planned Parenthood was an open eugenicist. And I mean, it's very clear. I mean, there's reports all over the place, but I've seen things going into schools and all sorts of stuff. And it's all divisive. It's divisive. And it's exactly what Satan wants. So.
But like you were saying, Tommy, when you look at the principles, the basic principles, that's kind of what refutes it. And so you don't need to get too into it to see the differences between the two. I think you guys are probably, your time is limited, right? So you're probably
we're about ready to wrap up. Like, yeah, y'all can continue on, but.
Okay.
But yeah, we had fun. So
real quick, I got one question for you guys. Have you guys seen CRT from like professors at BYU?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. What Tommy was referring to was a BYU professor at the Kennedy Center, and their book of the semester was How to Be Anti-Racist. And he actually gave a devotional at BYU last semester. No, it was about a year ago. And so in this book club, going back to it, I think he's holding How to Be Anti-Racist in his hands, and he's saying, this book can really increase your testimony and understanding of Jesus Christ and his role. And if your view of Jesus Christ has been changed, I want you to go and talk to your parents about the new things that you've learned. So it was like very, this is liberation theology versus savior theology.
But that
is a whole nother can of worms.
That's a whole nother can of worms. Yeah. That's a whole nother episode. I mean, you can spend a whole nother 45 minutes on that. But
I did a whole episode on that BYU devotional. Yeah. So you can go back to that and look at it. It was like an hour long.
Just to say on this, because Holland gave a talk at BYU.
I was going
to
ask, I was going to ask them. Ask them if they heard it first.
Oh,
because maybe
did you guys hear the talk from Holland where he was like addressing like the staff and
Yeah.
So if anyone hasn't heard that talk, if they're listening to the podcast and they're kind of, I guess, confused as to what's going on with the professors, that is a wonderful talk to listen to because he calls everyone out on the carpet, and the professor who gets up and talks about all this stuff and is, you know, feeding into all this. I mean, I fully believe he'll be held accountable for that. And so for me, I'm just like, that's on y'all because.
So you were in that class?
So it wasn't a.
This was a bit. Oh, well, are you talking about when the professor had How to Be Anti-Racist?
Yeah.
This was a book club open to all students.
Oh, okay.
And they were actually giving out free copies of How to Be Anti-Racist to anybody who wanted it. So yeah. I don't know how many people attended, but it was available for everybody.
And there are definitely other classes where that's been required reading. I mean, I had to read parts of White Fragility for a sociology class.
And your wife had to read So You Want to Talk About Race by Joma Alu as well.
And all those three books definitely, they branch out from critical race theory because it plays. I've had conversations with people with social media and they say, that has nothing to do with critical race theory. And it's like, I pulled up an article written by Ibram X. Kendi, and he quotes Kimberly Crenshaw in it, and she basically talks about how critical race theory is rooted in seeing the policy and the laws being racist in America. And then his whole book is about changing laws and policies so they're not racist, so that they're anti-racist in America. And I'm like, this is basically, it's of the same kin. And so when people say that what even is critical race theory question is just, I think people definitely have to arm themselves more with knowledge on it. But when people say, I'm thinking of the Black Medicine video that they did on critical race theory, where that guy answered and he said, it's basically blame the white people for everything. And it's like, vaguely, kind of, yes, that's partly a facet of it, but it's not the whole scope of critical race theory. It's not the deep portions of it, but essentially you can come to that conclusion when you read the deep facets of critical race theory.
Yeah, like I said, this is a whole nother can of worms, but without saying things I shouldn't say, I will cryptically say that we, Tommy and I, are part of spearheading a something to do something about it at BYU. I'll leave it at that. well,
good for you guys. You guys
more later.
You guys should be doing something about it. You know, it's like,
yeah, but
don't let this stuff go down without a fight. You know,
I listened to your Black Menaces podcast. I didn't listen to your podcast about Elder Holland's talk, but I saw that you did one. And so I think it's good that members of the church are looking into this. And it wasn't something that was happening about a year ago. Yeah. Or 2 years ago, I should say. So I think things can start to move in a good direction.
Basically before George Floyd. After that, everything started happening.
Everything changed after the poster Black Squares on Instagram Day. In my mind,
And this gives a lot of solace too, because there are a lot of members we know who feel the same way we do, but they're just not starting a podcast or, you know what I mean? Like something public. Yeah. So I think for a lot of members, this does bring them a lot of solace to hear like things like from you guys or stuff from us, you know, where they know that they're not alone in the way they feel, especially with like today's climate and everything. So to me, this is all like really important stuff, you know? So.
Yeah. So we'll definitely, I'm sure you'll continue to do stuff on this, and we'll definitely do a deeper dive into more of these things on our own podcast and Instagram page. So thank you for chatting with us, Carson and Catherine. It was great to see a podcast kind of similar to what we were doing out there also. And
awesome. Well, thanks for having us.
Awesome. Talk to you later.
See you guys.
Okay, bye.
I'm Luke Hansen, and this is Red Pill, Blue Blood.